You're listening to the Progress Your Health Podcast, episode 56.
Welcome to the Progress Your Health Podcast with your hosts, Dr. Robert Mackey and Dr. Valerie Davidson, a husband and wife team who specialize in bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and functional medicine. They're here to help you lose weight, balance hormones, and age gracefully. It's their mission to motivate, educate, and empower you to take your health to the next level. And now your hosts, hormone experts, Dr. Mackey and Dr. Davidson.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Progress Your Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
So here we are. It's already spring 2019. I can't believe that this year is going by so fast. Hopefully everyone is getting off to a good start. I think it's easy to say that you and I have been a little busy over the last couple of months.
Yes, we have definitely been busy.
We recently moved. We were going back and forth between Bellingham and Orcas Island. Now we're pretty much full time in Bellingham. The island was great, but you know, ferries and trying to just do simple running errands and things, like it was an all day production just to get the car fixed.
I don't think anybody's feeling super sorry for us because we got to live on that beautiful island and got to go back and forth between here, Bellingham and Orcas. But it's nice to be here in Bellingham because it's such a beautiful city. And Washington State itself has just been so much fun. It's just so gorgeous.
Yeah, living in the desert for as long as we did and now being back in Washington, we definitely appreciate the contrast between the Southwest and the Pacific Northwest. It's nice to be around trees and water. Now, the other big news is the day after Christmas, 2018 Christmas, we got a new puppy. He's a little Australian Shepherd, Border Collie, Blue Heeler mix, and we named him Bob.
Which, we weren't exactly looking for a puppy, because after Simon passed last May, we were just kind of holding steady, and, you know, we were missing him, but a friend of ours on Orcas had some unexpected litter, 7 puppies, and, well, it just fell in our lap.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of interesting. Orcas Island, for those of you that have never been there, it's a very small place. And once you've lived there for a while or spent enough time there, everyone kind of knows everyone. And anyone that lives in a small town kind of understands that. And you were talking to one guy on Orcas who happened to know the friend of ours that had a litter of puppies, you know, like 2 days or a day, or I think it was like 24 hours after they're actually born. And then we found out that it was a friend of ours that had his dog actually had the puppies, and it was all over. It was all over at that point. It was kind of inevitable that we were going to end up with one of them.
Yeah. So when we say we're busy, we're probably more busy having fun with the new puppy. So Bob's been just a blast and such a blessing. So definitely 2019 has started off for us with a beautiful start, but we're definitely ready to get back in the saddle and, you know, do our podcast, get our blogging out and start working from there.
Yeah. So on this episode, we're going to dive in a little bit into, we've still been getting lots of questions, and there's some, you know, there's some definite patterns or some themes to those questions. We're going to be, you know, kind of addressing a lot of them here on the podcast. But this one, we wanted to talk about perimenopause, but specifically the difference between perimenopause and PMS. Right, because that is, I think, a little bit of a, I wouldn't say controversial, but a little bit of a confusing situation. As we've talked about before, you know, perimenopause is kind of this hormonal limbo land, but we want to, in a little bit more detail, kind of dive into those two issues specifically and, give everyone a little bit more of an understanding of what's going on.
Exactly, because recently we've been getting lots of questions about women that just aren't really sure what's going on with their hormones. Their doctors aren't, not that they're not sure, but they just kind of blow them off and they don't know if they're having, you know, PMS, if they're having perimenopause, if they're having menopause, or what's going on. So we thought we would talk a little bit about the difference between perimenopause and PMS to help people understand where they might be in that limbo land of hormones.
Yeah, right. So let's first, Dr. Davidson, why don't you give me not a Webster dictionary definition or a medical definition, but give me a kind of simplified definition of PMS.
Well, PMS is, you know, premenstrual syndrome. So they say it's before your period starts, but some people have symptoms that happen, you know, right around the first day or two of their period. But basically they have changes in their hormones that are different between the first half of their cycle and the last half of their cycle. And when I'm talking cycle, we're talking, you know, in a perfect world, us gals have a 28-day cycle. We have a period from day one to day four, and then, you know, we go up through until day 28, and if there's no pregnancy, then you get another period. So PMS is where these symptoms, a collection of symptoms, happen before the period and maybe the first day or the second day of the period. So that's it, and everybody's different. And these symptoms really are in some ways very specific, but at the same time a little bit vague because they're very dependent on the individual. So that's where we want to differentiate between PMS and perimenopause, because I have a lot of people that tell me they're having PMS and it turns out it would be technically at the wrong time of their cycle.
Yeah, right. Now, and conventionally, you know, women are going to their primary care doctor, they're going to their gynecologist, they're going to, you know, doctors that should have some kind of an idea, but perimenopause is not really a diagnosis. If you look up ICD-10 codes, not that anybody knows what those things are, if you work in the healthcare field, you probably do, but an ICD-10 code, it used to be ICD-9, and they updated them a few years ago, that's basically an insurance billing code. There isn't an insurance billing code for perimenopause. And so you go all the way from PMS or, you know, a menstruating female to a non-menstruating female, which is menopause, with nothing in between. But that's kind of the point of what we're talking about. There is a very big distinction in between. And, you know, that's where, you know, women getting solutions and answers to their situations, the symptoms that they're having, that's where things kind of fall off and they don't really get the help that they want.
Exactly. So with perimenopause, that's different from PMS, and we're going to really dive into that a little bit more, but perimenopause is the time before menopause. So it's more like a phase, kind of like when you went through puberty. It wasn't like, you know, things happened right away. Like I went from being a non-menstruating young girl to a full-fledged teenager. It doesn't happen that way. It's a phase, just like perimenopause is a phase, where PMS isn't exactly a phase in life. It's something where the hormones are imbalanced during a female cycle, which it could be from their 18 to, you know, 30. And then they have these symptoms, where perimenopause is inevitable, you know, inevitable if you have ovaries, that those ovaries are going to decline in how the hormones are going to be secreted. So then you have perimenopause. You don't just go straight from being a menstruating female to a non-menstruating, and then I have menopause. So what we wanted to do in this podcast is differentiate what PMS means versus perimenopause. So like I was saying with PMS, that's before your period. So those symptoms should really be happening anywhere from 14 days to 2 days before your period starts. Where in perimenopause, that's really more where the symptoms happen all month long.
Yeah, right. A lot of women will refer to it, feels like I have PMS all the time. And there's some, you know, physiologic reasons as to why that's happening. And that's why, you know, what we've realized, you know, over the years, you see these patterns of patients that keep coming in with the same types of symptoms. Now, granted, every woman's a little bit different, but they, you know, there's these patterns that definitely tend to show up. And we're talking for PMS anyways, we're talking for anything from a woman in her mid-30s, especially after children, all the way up to her early 50s, right? That's like a 15-plus year span that a woman could be in perimenopause, and she wonders why, you know, she just doesn't feel like herself anymore. You know, that's potentially a long time to be in that, like you said, that phase where she's...
I think you might have overlapped on that. You said PMS. So PMS can happen from teenager up to, you know, yeah, like 35, 40. But perimenopause, like you're saying, is from the mid-30s up until their early 50s.
Yeah, right. So you could technically have, and this is where it gets maybe a little bit muddled or confusing, but you could have PMS and be in perimenopause kind of simultaneously. Like you said, perimenopause is more of a phase, where PMS is a syndrome of symptoms. You know, so, and now granted, what difference does it make? Well, for the woman, it makes a lot of difference, right? Because how that is going to be approached is really why we're discussing this. How are you going to approach some of those symptoms so a woman feels like herself? She doesn't feel like she's going crazy, which is one of those, you know, kind of feedback things that we get from patients all the time. They're in their, you know, early to mid 40s or mid to late 40s, and they feel like they're losing their minds, you know, both physically and mentally, because their bodies are just not cooperating any longer.
Exactly. So that's why with PMS and perimenopause, people aren't really sure what to do. But that's where we want to just differentiate. The symptoms between the two can be very similar. You know, irritability, number one, you know, cranky, irritable, patience is short, get angry very fast, but then can cry and get sad really quickly. But pretty much with PMS and perimenopause, one of the main symptoms is irritability. Then there can be the sugar cravings, the carb cravings, which we're going to kind of get into a little bit about how the hormones affect that with the, you know, the insulin, the cortisol, and all the sex hormones and whatnot. But the carb cravings and then the weight gain. So one differentiating factor that I notice with PMS versus perimenopause is with PMS, they feel pretty good for the first 2 weeks. And anywhere between, you know, the last 2 weeks of their cycle, they don't feel good. And that's where the cravings come in, and then they gain weight. And then the next, you know, first part of the cycle, they have to work really hard to lose the weight that they gained in during their PMS time. So it's like this weird little cycle that happens where in perimenopause, the sugar cravings are all month long. And that's where the weight gain. So in perimenopause, you see women continuously gaining weight, where women in PMS might have a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah, there might be more fluctuation. You might be, you see some more water retention, but then as their cycle comes around, you know, and they actually start menstruating, then that weight might come back off again. So you'll see ups and downs to the scale, quite, you know, and sometimes it can be quite, you know, quite significant. So, you know, for women that are paying attention to the scale and you do see some of those fluctuations, it's kind of unfair to be tracking your weight necessarily as you're getting close to menstruating, because your weight is going to fluctuate that. You know, it could potentially fluctuate many, many pounds, but a lot of that is probably more water retention than it is actually body fat.
And in perimenopause, the periods really do change. In women that have PMS, their periods aren't changing month to month, week to week, you know, whatnot. In PMS, they're having pretty regular periods every 28, you know, usually 25 to 32 days. They're regular. They're the same every month. They might not be the greatest thing in the world, but they're pretty consistent. Where when you notice a woman going into perimenopause is the periods change. In perimenopause, you're still having a period. If you have a uterus, you're still having some kind of bleeding, but you might be missing months. You might be getting two periods in a month. Or you might even be getting really heavy periods in perimenopause. So that's kind of a distinction that you see between PMS and perimenopause.
Yeah, right. The heavy, when a woman is in her, you know, late 40s to even early 50s and she's still menstruating like that, but her periods are getting heavier, that tends to kind of, you know, confuse some people. They think their periods should be getting lighter because they're getting closer to menopause. But like you said, it's very common as you're really getting close to the end of that for the periods to get heavier before they disappear. And I think it throws off the woman experiencing it. She's a little bit nervous because she's bleeding heavier, not to mention it's probably inconvenient and uncomfortable, but it also kind of, you know, throws the gynecologist for a loop. And now you're seeing, you know, things that are done in, you know, in consequence of that heavier bleeding, sometimes, you know, maybe not the best interest of the woman at that time.
Exactly. Because I've had, which we're going to go into later, the difference between perimenopause and menopause, because I have a lot of women that are perimenopausal trying to tell me, well, my doctor says I'm menopausal. And I'm telling them, no, you're having a period every month. It might be horribly different compared to how you had them, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. But if you're having a period, you're not menopausal. And one thing, like Dr. Mackey was saying about the heavy periods, is I have so many stories, and really we should, they're almost like, you know, better, you know, when they say fact is more interesting than fiction. I mean, stories of women, you know, leaking through their pants at dinner or at an event that they weren't even aware that they were going to have this heavy period, because sometimes in perimenopause, the period just come out of nowhere, as opposed to you might get like a little spotting, you know, and then in a couple hours you might have your, you know, your heavier bleed, or maybe the next day it's like, boom, here it comes. And sometimes in perimenopause, it can last. I've had women that have had bleeding for 3 weeks. And of course their doctors are going to get concerned and wanting to give them prescriptions and medications, but it's really about, you know, it's this phase that you're going through, because we, you know, our bodies are always changing, and trying to find, you know, safe alternatives to be able to manage and buffer that. But definitely in perimenopause, the periods are way different than with people that are having PMS.
Yeah, right. And now let's we'll again talk more about that probably also on the next episode as well too, because as we're as women are facing some of those decisions, a lot of times, unfortunately, when you go to the gynecologist, looking for some answers, you're only given a couple of options. We're only given birth control as an option. Now, women in their late 40s, we don't really think they should be taking birth control to quote unquote balance their hormones or control their hormones. Now, in some situations, that might be the only thing that they're, the only quote unquote option that they're given. We don't agree. We think there's lots of other options, potentially. But now for a woman that's, having some PMS situation, let's go a little bit more into kind of where for PMS specifically, right? Because PMS is not a normal occurrence, where perimenopause is somewhat inevitable, right? PMS, as you said a few minutes ago, PMS is more of a indication of imbalance. And where does that imbalance come from?
Exactly. Like, everybody, maybe a day or two before their period craves a little bit more sugar or maybe gets a pimple here or there. But when it becomes a little bit more extreme with the symptoms like irritability, weepy, way more acne right before their period starts or are having some issues. One quick little side note is with perimenopause, you see more of the irritability. With PMS, you can have the irritability, but you see more of the sadness that come in. So that's one thing you can also differentiate with that. But it usually hits mid-cycle because I'm going to say a perfect 28-day cycle. None of us have a perfect 28-day cycle, but typically when day one to day four, you're on your period. All the hormones are low. Estrogen and progesterone are low. And then the estrogen starts to rise. It peaks at day 12, which is supposed to stimulate ovulation. And once you have ovulation on day 14 is when you make progesterone. So really in the perfect 28-day cycle, we only make progesterone 2 weeks of, 2 weeks of the month. So that's where you see the issues happen is if somebody's estrogen isn't spiking or the estrogen's going up too high, or they might not be making enough progesterone, or their progesterone spikes and then drops down rapidly is where you see these fluctuations in the hormones through that basically day 14 to day 28. And that's where you see the PMS symptoms depending on that individual on what day that's going to happen.
Yeah, right. Now we've talked, of course, men are basically, I think I heard someone describe it as a one instrument band, right? They only have one hormone, one sex hormone to have to deal with, testosterone. Okay, but women, women, it's a lot more complicated. And you described there's, estrogen's increasing, then it's decreasing, progesterone's increasing. So there's a lot of potential for, for things to arise as, as literally like every week of the month, almost every few days of the month, the hormones are changing. That's why I think sometimes too, gynecologists, they won't run hormone tests. A woman wants to get her hormones checked. A gynecologist sometimes won't run those tests because the hormones are changing so much. Yeah, that's why we usually recommend if you are going to go into the lab and you are menstruating, whether you're having PMS symptoms or you're in perimenopause, to go on in to the lab on either day 12 of your cycle or day 20 of your cycle. Because now, for you and I anyways, if we're looking at those labs, we have a way to kind of pinpoint where those hormone levels should be anyways. Okay, so it just gives us a little bit more insight as to what's going on and what do those hormones really look like, even though the reference ranges for some of those labs sometimes are just, you can't, it's really more about the individual and her symptoms than really what those numbers show sometimes.
Exactly. And with progesterone and estrogen, they're really a team. They're partners. They're not independent of each other. So one thing you notice in perimenopause, because you think, well, what's going on with that if they have the symptoms all month long? In perimenopause, you might not be ovulating. If you're not ovulating, you might not be making enough progesterone. If you're not making progesterone, you'd think, well, why don't those women in perimenopause, just like women in PMS, have the symptoms from day 14 to day 28? And because we make progesterone day 14, to day 28. And the reason is like I said, estrogen and progesterone work together as a team. So when you have this rise in progesterone from day 14 to day 28, with day 21 being the highest, is that stimulates the body to cause estrogen receptors to upregulate for the first 14 days. So you have this, again, rise in progesterone, day 14 to day 28. It stimulates estrogen receptors to upregulate. So when you do make estrogen after your period, as that's coming up, you have these receptors. So let's say you're not making that progesterone. Those estrogen receptors aren't upregulating. So even though you're making estrogen the first half of the cycle, that's why the women in perimenopause have symptoms all month long.
Yeah. Now, what you just said there, that's really complicated, right? That's, I mean, there's a lot going on there, but you know, you're right. That is, I think a simple enough explanation, but yet still very complex. That's why we're talking about this issue, because it is complex and it does manifest. You know, granted, there's patterns and it does manifest, you know, certain things tend to show up from woman to woman, but it is a kind of a very individualized situation that's happening. One thing that we notice with people, with women, in both situations, PMS or perimenopause, there's one consistent thing that kind of, in some ways, triggers both or maybe worsens both situations, right? I think the big thing would be, you know, the higher the stress level, in some ways, the worse those two things are.
Yes, the environment, as much as we try to control it, can sometimes really control our hormones. So like you were saying, stress and, of course, food.
Yeah, right. So, and in some ways, food could be a stress. Now, one thing that we do see a lot as well is women are, especially in the perimenopause, they are trying to lose weight. Their bodies begin to not cooperate very well. You start putting weight around the midsection, which we'll probably talk a bit more on the next episode when we talk about perimenopause and menopause. Now, granted, we've been doing this a long time and we've talked with lots of women over the years. Every woman is concerned about weight. But that becomes, when a woman's still in her 20s and 30s, she can probably manage that fairly well. Maybe exercise a bit more, go on a diet, everything works well. But by the time a woman gets to that significant perimenopausal situation, that doesn't really, that same approach that she used to use doesn't really quite work anymore.
No, because the hormones have changed. But then, like Dr. Mackey was saying, is the stressors or the external environment is having an influence on your hormones. So while we were just talking about, estrogen and progesterone, which I could go on for hours and even go into way more symptoms of, your typical perimenopausal female. But I do think probably what's also super important is the insulin and the cortisol, which is what the stress is affecting.
Yeah, right.
Which then downregulates and affects the estrogen and progesterone, but okay.
Yeah. Right. So really complicated. I mean, you and I could literally talk about some of that, nerdy physiology, hormone physiology all the time. That's what we like to do.
We'll probably do that after the podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
just
yeah.
On our own.
Yeah, right. Now, she's, of course, being somewhat facetious, but not really, right? We talk about these things all the time trying to understand. So when we say stress, by the time a woman is in her mid to later 40s, right, she's got lots of stress. She's got kids, she's working, she's a wife, she's a mother, she's, got things going on, she's exercising multiple times a week. So there's life stress, there's lack of sleep stress, there's family stress, there's work stress. I mean, there's so many different things. Women nowadays have lots of pressure, there's lots of responsibility. And the more of those things there are, all those external factors, all that translates into an exacerbated PMS and to really bad perimenopause. So when we look at hormone situations, right, we're looking at what we consider to be kind of the primary metabolic hormones, the insulin, the cortisol, the thyroid, and then how that manifests and how that influences the sex hormones, the estrogen, progesterone, the testosterone, the DHEA. Those secondary hormones or the sex hormones, you and I kind of talk a lot, that those don't have as much of an influence on the metabolic hormones as the metabolic hormones have on the secondary sex hormones. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And that probably that sounds perfect to me. But just to reiterate, like you said, the sex hormones like the estrogen and the progesterone are a little bit downstream from the insulin and the cortisol. So when the insulin and the cortisol, and this which is coming from stress, can affect the estrogen and progesterone production, where the other way doesn't exactly apply as easily.
Yeah, right. So when you really, and the point of bringing that up, talking about stress, and a lot of doctors talk about stress, but a lot of doctors, I think, use stress as an excuse when they don't know how to fix a problem or help a patient with a particular problem. Oh, well, you're just really stressed, and their job is done. But not you and I necessarily, but research has kind of caught up to, what stress actually does to us. And for women, how does stress translate into female hormone problems? Okay, whether it's PCOS, whether it's PMS, whether it's perimenopause, and then how that exacerbates when a woman is transitioning into menopause. Stress is kind of at the, you know, is at really at the crux of almost all of those things.
Yeah, because the stress can really cause your progesterone to drop. Like I was saying, your progesterone might already be a little low because you're in perimenopause, or you have PMS and that hormones are disrupted and your progesterone is low, but that insulin and that cortisol can really exacerbate that. But on the flip side, like Dr. Mackey was saying, is while that, you know, the insulin and the cortisol affects the sex hormones, they're more subtle. They kind of buffer the effects of the insulin and the cortisol. It's not that they directly affect them, but they buffer it. So like he was saying, when you're, you know, 23 years old, you can, you know, have a milkshake, French fries, and a double burger, and then go right to sleep and wake up and be fine and be like, okay, I'm fine. Let's do this day all over. Or, you know, maybe you're in your 20s, you gain a few extra pounds over the holidays, and then you just basically, you know, cut out some food and go exercise, and then it comes off in a week. Where when you're in your 40s, you have one meal and maybe not even a bad meal. Like, hey, we went out for Mexican food and now I'm up 3.5 pounds on a Monday. And then it doesn't go away.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's the frustration that we hear from women, is that exactly that. You can get away with things. Your body is a little bit more resilient, of course, when you're in your 20s, maybe even your early 30s. But then once women, you know, start having children, and as you start entering in the 40s, again, the effects that has on hormones, specifically the female hormones, now you lose. And really, that's really kind of the, I wouldn't say the epitome or what causes perimenopause, but you're losing that resilience to those other metabolic hormones, the insulin, the cortisol, and the thyroid. And now, you know, women's bodies are just not doing what they want them to do at all anymore. Okay, which is why they're looking for answers, because they go to their, you know, their primary care, their gynecologist, and they don't really make any headway. They're not able to get anything besides a prescription for an antidepressant, maybe an anti-anxiety medication, and as we said earlier, probably some birth control, which we really don't agree with at all. Really any of those treatment options, like, we don't really agree with them all. That's really why we're talking about this.
Exactly. So like we were saying, you know, with perimenopause, there's not a lot of conventional options, and you would never want to put a woman in their 40s on birth control pills, especially because you're not trying to control birth. But in PMS, that's another really common, basically conventional treatment, is to put a woman that's, you know, saying, I have really bad PMS. And trust me, I've had, you know, doctors roll their eyes at that, and they really shouldn't, because when you have really bad PMS, that's pretty serious. But like I was saying about the, you know, the insulin and the cortisol, when you have PMS, your estrogen and progesterone, they're just out of balance. They haven't dropped in the way that it is in perimenopause. So they might be able to maintain the weight, like, you know, have the cravings when they're having PMS and then be able to work it off during the next, you know, the next couple of weeks after that. So in PMS, you do see a little bit of that distinction there. But what's interesting is in PMS and perimenopause is you have this little bit of hormonal imbalance between the estrogen and the progesterone, and then you've got your testosterone and DHEA that are hanging around. Now, testosterone is not a reproductive hormone for us females. It's a reproductive hormone for men. Sure, they have lots of it, but we have a little bit of it, and we also make that by way of DHEA. So DHEA is a hormone that comes from the adrenal glands, and pretty much we make a little bit from our ovaries, but majority adrenal glands, it converts to testosterone. So that's how we make our quote unquote androgens, because females need those hormones as well. But when the estrogen and progesterone are a little out of balance, sometimes that testosterone and DHEA can take over.
Yeah, right. So now you have, you know, as you would, I'm sure, would agree, a little bit of androgens for women is good, but that's not what makes women women. Women are driven more by the estrogen and some of the progesterone. One thing that we've seen over the last few years is women in perimenopause, doctors are giving them, you know, because they might be complaining of, you know, low energy, weight gain, and no libido. So now doctors, as the first line of treatment, are giving them these huge doses of testosterone, and they feel even worse as a result. Okay, you can't lead with things like that. A little bit's good, but too much is going to cause problems. You're going to kind of really throw a wrench in the gears potentially. When we're dealing with those situations, we really don't do a lot of, at least start from a place to start. We don't really do a lot of testosterone or androgens, maybe DHEA in some cases, but like what you're saying, stress really can really drive those androgens up. And then that can affect of course, this is a rhetorical question for you, but what are the common symptoms that you see from having high androgens?
Well, it's not that they're high, but you think, let me just say for perimenopause, for example, when the progesterone drops, because you're not really making a lot of progesterone in perimenopause, and your estrogen doesn't drop, but it drops a little bit. It does. In your 40s, your estrogen drops a little, but not a lot. But the progesterone dives. Is then the testosterone's around and there's nothing to buffer it. So that's why women will complain about hair loss. So they'll have hair loss, but it's more in the temples and the top of the head. They'll say, oh, I feel like my hairline is receding. And in some ways it could be because that testosterone's bullying the system because there's nothing to buffer it. The irritability, I think that's where that's coming from more, is that progesterone's dropped, which progesterone has influences with cortisol and GABA. But at the same time, that testosterone there is making you a little testy. Same with the DHEA, because DHEA is a little bit more of that's also considered an androgen. Acne, I have women in their 40s and they're like, why am I breaking out all the time? Well, that testosterone and DHEA aren't being buffered. They're great hormones. They're great hormones when they're balanced, but without anything to buffer them, they act like a bully, and then you get acne, and it's more like cystic acne on your chin and your jawline, and one will stick around for 3 weeks, and it's never clear. So that's probably a couple of the main things that you see with that, with those androgens not being balanced. And I wish testosterone gave us an amazing sex drive, and it can in some cases to certain extents, but normally you don't see that, even though the testosterone and DHEA aren't being buffered.
Yeah, right. You'd think that you'd see a lab test. We want to see a DHEA level, or we actually test for DHEA sulfate, whatever you want to see, but really we're testing hormone. DHEA sulfate is just a metabolite of DHEA. We want to see that usually between, let's say, 100 to 150 on a LabCorp Quest blood test. But that number might be, 220, 250, 300, the higher that number goes, you think they'd have a really good libido, really good sex drive. And you're right. In some ways, the higher those androgens go, the worse their libido is. But when that woman's in perimenopause too, when she's in her, let's say her mid 40s, you really don't know where that DHEA or testosterone is going to be. You don't really know, based on some of those symptoms, if her number is going to be high or low. That's why we test them a lot, because we want to know where it is. I think the other one that might be more PCOS, but certainly can happen in perimenopause too, is some hair growth.
And PMS, definitely in PMS as well as perimenopause.
Yeah. So there are some similarities between the two of those there as far as, the breakouts and whatever. But certainly the hair loss from having too many androgens, the hair growth from having too many androgens, that's...
And hair growth, unfortunately, not on your head.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And of course, in places, unfairly in places that you don't want it to grow. That definitely is, something that we pay attention to, quite frequently. There's ways to deal with that, the conventional approaches are, really not very good at.
And like you were talking about with testing, so we do like to test, we do like to test that, definitely test the thyroid, because that's impacted, by the change in the female hormones, the estrogen, progesterone, the testosterone, the DHEA sulfate. We do like to test. There's a little bit of controversy on how to test, because some doctors, or do this test, do that test, or don't test. I have plenty of women that with PMS and perimenopause, and their doctors don't do any hormone testing. I mean, I've had some of them tell them to go see psychiatrists, which is just really sad. Or like you said, put them on birth control pills or antidepressants. But I do think testing is important. And there are several ways to test. And it's not that one's better than the other. It's just knowing how to interpret it.
Yeah. Coming up with some, a consistent amount of information, both from a baseline perspective and then after there's been some type of intervention, to see how those numbers change. So we have, of course, with our patients, we have, very specific things that we look at all the time, specifically for those reasons, because we're looking at, as you said, we're looking at the DHEA, the testosterone, the progesterone. We're looking at those things for very specific reasons, and even thyroid for that matter, looking at at, you know, the thyroid test as well, because as we said earlier, the insulin, the cortisol, the thyroid, you know, the thyroid can have a huge impact on the female cycle. So in the show notes, we'll put a list of some of the tests that we typically run for both PMS and perimenopause. Those are fairly similar, but there'd be some things that we might do for one and not for the other. But, you know, there'd be a lot of similarities between the two.
Exactly, to kind of give you an idea, because that is one of the limitations with testing, is whether you're in PMS or perimenopause or not sure, is you're still having a period. And like Dr. Mackey said, is every single day of the cycle is different. So a lot of, you know, a lot of doctors like to test on day one and two, but your estrogen and progesterone are going to be low. So if you're going to do a blood test, you know, we always say to try to do it somewhere between day 19 and day 25, depending on how long your cycle is, with day 21 being the perfect. But that's some of the limitations, like I was saying, is sometimes the doctors don't exactly know how to interpret that. And blood testing can be, you know, covered by insurance, which is great. So there's not a huge, you know, financial, you know, output for the patient. But then if somebody doesn't know how to interpret it, then we're not really, you know, we're back to square one. There are some really good urine tests. The Dutch test, the urine test is really great. But that's a little bit of a lie. I wouldn't say controversial, but it's hard to interpret. So that should be another podcast we should do, is how to interpret your Dutch test, your urine test. And then at the same time, it can be pricey out of pocket.
Yeah, right. And that test, of course, is not covered by insurance, but it does have some things. It does look like the estrogen metabolites, which is also very helpful. And it does look at, if you do the main hormone test, it looks at all of them. It looks at your adrenal hormones. It looks at your female hormones. It gives you some insight into methylation, which is a genetic issue. You know, so there's some...
it's an amazing test.
Yeah, there's definitely some really good... Yeah, so we'll definitely do another one on... Because the Dutch test is becoming very popular, right? Everyone is recommending the Dutch test. But, you know, at the same time, understanding what those numbers are telling you and how that dictates what you're going to do for a woman, right? That's really the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. Who wants to drop a few hundred bucks and then just have this really pretty paper with lots of numbers on it and nobody knows what to do with it?
Right. Even in our, you know, space, right, you know, the functional medicine, bioidentical hormone space, a lot of doctors do saliva testing, which is a third type. So we have blood testing, we have dried urine testing with the Dutch test, and there's saliva testing. Saliva testing has been around for a long time. There's some really great companies that do that as well. ZRT Labs, Genova,
Diagnostics.
Mm-hmm. They've all been around for a long time doing saliva testing. And there's some controversy about that as well when a woman is on hormones, right? You know, so we prefer and granted, this is opinion-based. Some doctors are more comfortable with other things. We prefer to do blood tests.
Yeah, blood or the urine. You know, I do think the urine test is a good one, but the blood, but we've been doing it for years. We have certain timing when people do it. If people are taking hormones or something, we tell them exactly the timing of when they do the blood test versus when they took their prescriptions or their supplements or their dietary. So we have kind of a whole regime on all that. But I do think it's important. So that's one of the limitations with that. But they're definitely, even though you might have been to your gynecologist, your primary care, your GP, and been told, hey, there's not really much you can do, or they just kind of roll their eyes and say, yeah, I don't know anything about hormones, is there really are some good options, which I definitely think we'll get into in the future as well, so you can have some, you know, just some choices.
Yeah, right. And we'll definitely dive into the, you know, some of those solutions. You know, it really comes down to a dietary approach, a supplementation approach, possibly a prescription approach. You know, prescriptions can be very helpful, but it doesn't have to be necessary. You know, so now you're not just, you know, left with the only option of using birth control and antidepressants, you know, for managing your symptoms. There's lots of other options. But as you said, from a conventionally minded physician, you know, their lack of knowledge in some of those ways, or their lack of being able to properly help you, they kind of blame it on you a little bit and kind of send you on your way, or they just give you those limited options, and that, you know, that might help initially or partially, but it doesn't really, I don't think it does as good of a job as it could for most women.
I agree.
So this has been, hopefully this hasn't been too confusing, right? You know, talking about some of the physiology and the cycle, but I think that's important. I think women really want to know those things, right? Their doctors might not tell them some of that stuff about the transition and how the hormones are changing. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in pretty much every week of the female cycle, so there's definitely potential. And with our stressful lives, we all are busy and, working and families and, everything that we have going on. And how that, kind of manifests as some of these problems, whether it's PMS, perimenopause, or menopause, and then everything else that kind of comes off of that, adrenal problems and thyroid, which we'll definitely talk more about later. So I think this gives a good overview. Treatment-wise, from our perspective, there's lots of things. Conventionally, not so much, which is why we're talking about this. On the next episode, we're going to go a little bit further and then discuss the difference between perimenopause and menopause, as we said. So some of these things we'll be kind of touching on in a little bit more detail. Do you have anything else to add to this one?
No, this was good. And if anybody has any questions, please reach out. I think we're ready to go play with the puppy.
Yeah, right.
Go play with Bob.
Yeah, it's good to be back. We haven't done one of these in a while, so hopefully this one was informative. Hopefully you're able to learn some things, and we'll definitely be diving a little bit deeper on the next one.
And the opt-in, too.
Yeah, right. So another thing that we did fairly
now
recently is...
Now you're going to make me blush.
Yeah, we created a little short mini course that covers some of these issues. So if you go to the Progress Your Health website, you can see it right there on the homepage. You just click
There's my picture.
Yeah. You just click on the button and there's a video there, kind of introductory video. And there's there's a short little mini series on the things that we've talked about, perimenopause, menopause, PMS, and thyroid. We did a pretty good job with that. So,
PCOS on there also. And it's just a free little video course there that we did. Just we actually took more like... more like the symptoms. So we give you the actual, like in perimenopause, I think, Michelle, we kind of go through the symptoms and how old she is and who she is to really kind of target in on, am I, perimenopausal or not? So it's interesting, and it was definitely out of my comfort zone, but it was really fun. So maybe we'll do some more.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So until next episode, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Progress Your Health podcast. If you like what you've heard on this podcast, please give us a positive review on iTunes. This allows us to spread our message, grow our audience, and help more people around the world. For more information, visit our website at progressyourhealth.com.